Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits Pod Quiz podcast. And if I can not stammer through my words, hopefully we'll be pretty entertaining for you here today. We have Darius Austin with us, who's been my my steady rock here on Wednesday broadcasts. How you doing today, Darius?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. I have to say, I probably have it a little bit easier than people like Justin, who told us he couldn't make it because his kid has lice, which doesn't sound like a fun thing to deal with. So I consider myself to have a relatively easy schedule to work around in that regard.
I believe that the trauma that Justin's going to go through with the child is probably worse than the actual treatment. but the trauma with the child and the different things that you have to do around your house, I believe, are the most painful things in that process. But that happens around almost every child's schooling at some point or another. Have you heard of that before, Darius?
Yeah, I'm sort of adjacently familiar with the process, but never having gone through it myself, I don't really know quite the ins and outs of it.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly solid pain, but I don't think it's it's not exactly like raising a colicky baby or something like that. I don't think it's quite that traumatic, but nonetheless, I feel for him because it's especially important for the mental well-being of the child to get past this ASAP. On from that, as usual, I'm afraid to speak too much before we get to our player list because that would give Darius extra hints as to exactly what the tie-in is for the players. But if you're unfamiliar with the Pod Quiz podcast, we do it in reverse fashion. We go through a list of players, and then we try and figure out, I try and see if the analysts can figure out what the tie-in was. And you could also play along with us at home, or out on your walk, or on your way to work, however it works for you. The first player that I want to mention today is 29-year-old center fielder from the Pittsburgh Pirates, Starling Marte. He has a drug suspension in his recent history. Sort of asking the question if the Pirates are his team now that Andrew McCutchen has moved on. What do you think of the season that Starling Marte is having, Darius?
Yeah, it's a really impressive bounce back. I think I was kind of disappointed that there wasn't more of a discount on him because of the missed time last year with the suspension. But in a season when so many players aren't giving us the stolen bases we wanted, I think Marte has pretty much lived up to his career rates in that regard. He's still a good base stealer in terms of percentage success as well, so he's not just running loads and getting caught and adding the steals that way. And then he's added some power in as well. He's hitting more home runs than ever before. He doesn't look like a guy who's likely to continue this pace because he doesn't hit the ball in the air that much, but he has had home runs, fly ball rates as high as he does now a couple of times before, and he's hitting them to all fields, so it's not like a guy just yanking them down the line. Everything looks good discipline-wise, I just think all around a great fantasy player. We're going to get five category production out of him, and you can't really say that about too many players right now.
Yeah, I think he needs to be dropped a little bit in OBP leagues just because he's always around a 5 to 6% walk guy, which isn't horrific, but it also is not something that really boosts an ADP despite his on-base percentage is not moved up as much as we would like, still below 350. I did want to mention that I looked at his batted ball profile. I'm going to be able to speak today, Darius, I promise, at some point. His batted ball profile states that his soft contact is down 11.8% this year, which I think is an especially nice thing. It was sort of a career high last year at 29%, and it's down 11.8% from that. And this is the lowest soft contact rate that he's had since 2013. So we can hope maybe that this is contributing some to what we see going on with Starling Marte. All right, now let's talk about Blake Treinen, the 30-year-old closer. He was a failed closer with the Nationals last year, but turned it on and regained the gig in Oakland by the end of last year. And suddenly he's having an amazing season. which is kind of what I hoped for when I drafted him before last season. What do you think of Blake Treinen's season?
Yeah, it's amazing. He was a guy I've picked up in a few leagues. So he was one of the later closer targets that I like to get. And when he fell, I was jumping all over him. The stuff is incredible. I mean, he's sitting 98 on his fastball, which rang up to 101. The sinker is just, I don't really understand how anybody hits it. It's got incredible late movement. He's got almost 30% whiffs per swing, which is the second highest in MLB, just behind Zach Britton, who obviously hasn't pitched very much at all. And he gets a bunch of ground balls off it as well when he isn't getting whiffs. So it's the ideal pitch, really. And I think that's one reason why he also has only allowed one home run on the year. And he's never had a home run per nine higher than 0.7, which is really, really good. He's also got a slider to back it up as well, just to add to those strikeouts. And I think it looks mechanically like he's tightened up his release points as well, while he's getting, even though he's getting kind of more separation on those fastballs. So I think he's harder to read. Obviously, even if you pick up the stuff, you know, no guarantee you're going to square it up. And your favorite, the swinging strike rate, is just through the roof, 18.2%. And guys are just chasing stuff all outside the zone as well, over 40% chase rate, which is really high. So everything looks excellent. I think he always kind of had the stuff, but now that he's finally put it together over two-thirds of a season, and hopefully the rest of the way, this looks to me like your top 10 closer.
Well, I'll tell you, swinging strike rate is an excellent component when a pitcher is doing well. I think I struggle more with the predictive forces of swinging strike rate. Obviously, those home run to fly ball numbers that you spoke of, that equates to a 3.1% home run to fly ball rate, which is obnoxiously low. But at the same time, I mean, he matched it one time for in 2014 with the Nationals. You know, if he's not walking too many guys, he is absolutely filthy at every single level. And obviously playing in Oakland has helped him with the fact that, you know, even though this isn't a particularly low ground ball percentage, he does have the lowest ground ball percentage of his career right now at 49.2. But you can get away with more fly balls when you pitch in Oakland. That is a certainty. So Blake Treinen is having a very nice year indeed. Now let's speak to JT Realmuto, who has had to play this year around swirling trade rumors the entire way since before he even got to spring training. His agent even asked for a trade to sort of help the mass exodus out of Miami, which I sort of get this vision of people moving between Mideastern countries when I say that, which is not exactly how it happened with the Marlins, but it just sort of feels like there was this trend that everything that wasn't bolted down was going to get traded out of Miami, and that has not exactly happened yet. What do you think about JT Realmuto's season?
It's really impressive, and all the more impressive for the fact that he's a catcher, and we've discussed ad nauseum the terrible state of catchers this year. For a catcher to be hitting 300 is pretty remarkable. I mean, we've seen Buster Posey do that on a regular basis, but not really anybody else over the last few years. So that's outstanding to see. He's added a bit more power. The hard contact is up. I think he's pulling the ball slightly more to capitalize on that power, and he's also chasing outside the zone less. So I think his selectivity is improved with a bit more experience. The other thing I really like about Realmuto is he doesn't seem to have any obvious weaknesses. I went through all his splits against the different pitches. There's no clear weakness. He's not out here flaming at change-ups or just struggling to get a hold of sliders. He's pretty much solid against every type of pitch. So the one thing, really, if you draft Realmuto, I think you'll be disappointed with, is the stolen bases. He doesn't seem to have slowed down. His base running metrics are actually better. His Statcast sprint speed is the same as last year. He's still the fastest catcher in baseball, but he's just 1 for 3 at stealing bases. And I don't know whether that's because it's the Marlins and, you know, maybe that he's not trying all that much, or whether he's trying to preserve himself, or whether there's another reason entirely that he's not running. But I think people hope to get at least 8 to 10 steals out of Realmuto, and you're not getting those. But I think given his overall slash line, you can't really complain too much.
Well, I find it kind of amazing that catcher has gone from ridiculously bad to absurdly putrid. And I think that's a pretty accurate analogy. It's hard to imagine that it could have gotten this bad. I looked at catcher rankings and see that Evan Gattis is still out in front, and you have to scroll down quite a ways to get to Buster Posey. On top of it being a really bad position, what's really happened is that the people that we put stock in to start the season, that we said, okay, well, we're going to get away from all this. The only one that we put stock in was Real Muto to be someone who could save you at the position, and he's come through. Everyone else has been bad, and so that's, I think, has really added to the exclamation points at the end of saying that catcher is really, really bad. So JT Real Muto is really having an excellent season. That 350 OBP that you're seeing from him is something that you're going to really struggle to find in any other catchers. And the rest of his numbers look roughly along the lines that we expected, except for the steals, as was mentioned. He even, this 49 runs and 49 RBIs, while not being bad for the Marlins, he's actually missed some time. So it could even be better. Although I do believe the Marlins are a little bit better offensively than most people thought they would be, which is sort of faint praise, I believe. But at the same time, I don't think you're gonna automatically you don't shuffle in bad pitchers to pitch against Miami. You still want good pitchers to pitch against Miami, which is maybe a little better than what we thought it was going to be going in. All right, now let's talk about a second baseman that was available on the cheap this offseason, and that's Cesar Hernandez of the Philadelphia Phillies. What's your perception of the kind of season that Cesar Hernandez is having, Darius?
I think he's having a really nice season. I own Hernandez in TGFBI, actually, so I'm fairly familiar with his production. I've always kind of liked his profile. You know how I love guys who are good at getting on base. Hernandez has always done that kind of quietly. Doesn't have big power, so I think he gets a bit overlooked in that regard, but he runs really well. He's 14 for 16 stolen bases this year. That's, in line with his career numbers. He's a fast guy. He's one of the faster guys in baseball, on track for fourth straight year of 15 plus steals. He's lead off for the Phillies, so he's getting a lot of opportunities to run and get on base as well. And he's actually bumped that walk rate up to 14%, which is really nice. So I'm really impressed with him just kind of continuing his growth and actually adding a little bit of power this year. It looks like he's going to get to double digit homers for the first time. So he's no one that you're going to sit there and go, wow, Cesar Hernandez got me 40 steals or 30 home runs. But I think he's just a solid guy. Maybe a sort of Ben Zobristy kind of guy, where nobody's going to look at his numbers and go, oh, this is a ridiculous player. But just a solid guy, gets on base all the time, consistent. But you sit there at the end of the year and you're going to go, oh, yeah, Cesar Hernandez was pretty good for my team this year.
Well, he's certainly on pace to have a career year in steals, which is especially nice because, as Darius mentioned, there are a number of there's a number of outlets for steals that are disappointing so far this year. So Cesar Hernandez was largely discounted because there was the concept that maybe Scott Kingery was going to take over for him, which, if you looked at last year's 373 on-base percentage and realized that their manager, Gabe Kapler, is especially new age when it comes to statistics, I always had a hard time believing that they weren't going to play Cesar Hernandez regularly. I mean, the narrative was somewhat fed, of course, by the deal that Philly inked Scott Kingery to before he even saw the diamond. Of course, Kingery hasn't exactly pushed the issue himself. He's probably having about as disappointing a season as could have been perceived to happen. Justin Mason was right. I was a little overblown on Scott Kingery this year, but fortunately for me, I wasn't so overblown that I own him anywhere. So while my opinion was incorrect, at least I didn't stamp it to my forehead either. But I thought that contract meant that Kingery was going to get an extensive look, and I thought that we were going to see quite a bit more power from Kingery than we've seen. And as usual, spring training power can be very, very deceptive. So let's move on to the next guy who happens to be hot as a pistol, and I have an extended story about this gentleman that I will not bore you with before we go off to Darius and see exactly how he feels. How do you feel about the season that Eugenio Suarez is having for the Reds?
Well, I'm excited to hear the story now. But yeah, I'm so impressed with Suarez. He's another guy who just seems to kind of keep building on his success. I always wonder what these guys playing with Joey Votto get out of it. We've seen Jesse Winker now with like insane walk to strikeout rates. Suarez is another guy who's obviously spent a lot of time with Votto in the clubhouse. And apparently a lot of the guys do just stand around with him, you know, watch him take BP or ask him for advice in BP. And I wonder if a player like that does help you to improve, especially with the plate approach. It's the hard contact with Suarez is really impressive, though. 52.2% hard contact percentage. He's 15th in baseball at balls hit 95 plus miles per hour, and nearly 50% of his balls are being hit that hard. So, yeah, it's all real. I don't think there's any fluke about this. The guy has power. And the incredible thing is that he missed a couple of weeks and he's still got 74 RBI, which is absolutely nuts. So, yeah, really impressive. The Reds lineup is a lot better than people would have thought, I think, with Votto and Jeanette being really impressive, and now Winker really taking a step forward. There's actually quite a few good bats in that lineup. So I think Suarez is a really nice player. He probably still gets a bit overlooked for being on a terrible team and not being a high profile name. But I think he's legit, and yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he does going forward.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to add to your statistical analysis, and then I'm going to hold off until after you make your guess as to what we're doing, as to explain to you the story. That was like a teaser. You see what I did there? That was like foreshadowing.
Is the story related then?
Sort of. Do you have the image in your head now of people sitting on the edge of their seats just waiting to find out exactly what my story is about you?
I bet the listeners cannot take it.
That may be an understatement, but I think you've tapped into at least the spirit of it. he has a .339 BABIP this year, which if you've seen Suarez, he's not run particularly well. But I just want to mention that in the minors, he had BABIP seasons of, you know, 50 games or more, I should say stops, I guess, of .379, .356, and .340. And he had a .341 BABIP in nearly 100 games in 2015. And the other thing I really did is I tried to make a deep dive into exactly what's happening with his batted ball profile. And the only real change I can see is that he has like nearly a 6% jump in using the center of the field, which makes me think that maybe he's trusting his power a little bit more, his ability to be able to go oppo taco, if you will, and it really seems to be working. And of course, you don't have to have a boatload of power to be able to get the ball out of the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, which is, as an aside, I feel is a highly underrated ballpark to visit. I just don't know why Reds fans don't go there. Like, Reds fans do not go there, I think the Cubs weekends must be their only real binions of attendance throughout the year. It just absolutely amazes me. I will give you this this aside, since this format and only one analyst gives us a little more time, is that my wife and I went to Great American Ballpark, okay, right after they had signed Phillips, Brandon Phillips, and Joey Votto to their long-term deals, and they were in first place. Okay, now granted, it was a day game, but we went to Cincinnati, and there was 9,000 people there. Like, that just wow. That just absolutely stuns me. And it is a truly gorgeous park, and they have a ton of mascots, which I don't even think you know this about me, Darius, but I love mascots. I can't explain why. But they have a ton of mascots. You know, they have a Mr. and a Mrs. Red, and you know, they got the big baseball head dude too. So there's mascots everywhere. So that's not the reason that they're not drawing fans. And on top of it, you can walk right out of home plate and right into a casino, which you'd think would help draw people in as well. So anyway, this side rant is over. But I just wanted to mention that Eugenio Suarez is really, really having an excellent season. All right, now let's move on to Andrew Benintendi, who I really find to be a fascinating case study here, because I believe there was a lot of people that thought Benintendi was overrated as a draft stock going into this season, despite the fact that he was, you know, seemingly the Red Sox have never lost any faith in Benintendi. But good God, he is having a really splendid season. What are your takes on what's going on with Andrew Benintendi, the dancing Boston Red Sox outfielder?
I've always liked Benintendi because he's never really been a bad hitter. He's just kind of conquered every level he's been at almost immediately. And I think part of the reason people thought he was overdrafted was that his, you know, sophomore season was not quite the level that they expected. He was kind of getting all the rookie of the year attention, and that obviously went to Aaron Judge, and Benintendi was kind of just a bit better than league average overall, but it wasn't the flashy season I think people were hoping for, given what he did in his debut in 2016. So I think that might have fed into it a little bit. And I think people also thought that just without top-end power, he was going to struggle to live up to his draft position. But he's taken a ton of steps forward in kind of every department, really. It looks like he's going to set new highs in all the categories. He's 17 for 18 in steals, so he's not a complete burner, but he's a great athlete, and I think he's obviously got great base running instincts. He's also got 6 triples on the year. His OBP is excellent. He's got an excellent approach at the plate, a good eye, doesn't chase too much. And that power is coming up a little bit as well. And now I don't think he's going to be a 35 to 40 homer guy ever. I don't think he's that kind of hitter, but he's going to give you a plus batting average. He's going to keep getting on base a ton. The speed is going to carry on, and he's in the heart of a terrific lineup, which is going to be there together for a little while, I think. So you love all of that. And my only real concern is something I actually wrote about at Banish to the Pen at the end of last month, is the fact that he's still not all that great against left-handers. He's kind of continued to be a below average hitter against them, strikes out 25% of the time this year. That's kind of picking nits, because he's still kind of nearly league average against left-handers this year. He's just so good against righties that it's kind of a bit jarring to see the split between the two. So that's the one thing I'd like to see him improve and take it to the next level and become an even better player, but that's just me trying to find warts on an outstanding baseball player.
Well, I'm gonna show you a big swing in commentary here. The first thing I'm gonna do is I'm going to play a sympathizer to the people who underrated Benintendi, and I'm gonna say, if you're ever gonna hide, the place to hide is between Mookie Betts and JD Martinez. you're gonna hide. You know, I mean, unless you're a perennial MVP candidate, you're hidden between, you know, the kind of seasons that those guys have had in recent years. Okay, then I'm going to absolutely blast these people, because what on God's green earth was a 23-year-old hitter supposed to do to impress somebody? Last year, okay, 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases as a 23-year-old, okay? Over 10% walk rate. Okay? BABIP was not out of line. It was just 301. He had 90 RBIs and 84 runs, and they literally sat him, semi-regularly to get, I forget his name, and he's been in the league a long time. He used to be a Diamondback. Why do you always have to help me? This is part of the quiz. Young is his last name. Isn't that right? Anyway, they sat him last year in left pretty regularly to get this their lefty specialist.
You mean Chris Young, yeah?
Chris Young. Get him in the lineup. They even sat him some for that. Oh, this year they're playing him a ton. He's got 96 games in already. Okay. He's on pace for just a boatload of runs. He scored 71 runs in 96 games, which, again, is teammate-oriented. I get that. But I don't know exactly what young players have to do to impress people anymore. This is part of the side story I'm going to tell later. You know, when you just look at a player and what a player does before the season ends, like you start to judge a player before this groupthink happens that Andrew pointed to on our Monday podcast, before everybody starts to spin a story. You know, like, and sometimes I think that's a really, really good activity to go through because groupthink can nudge you in a direction where your initial thoughts don't take you at all. And you know, he was my last keeper in a six keeper fantasy league, and I remember getting blasted for it by the end of the season that I would keep Andrew Benintendi. I just, like I said, I don't understand what young kids have to do to impress anymore. I mean, Ozzie Albies last year is another one. He comes up youngest player in the minors, youngest player in the majors to be called up last year. And by the end of the season, everyone's like, I don't know. This seems pretty fluky. I don't know. I don't know what these guys have to do. I mean, I just, it baffles me. I mean, there was nothing in last year's profile of Andrew Benintendi that said that he was going to get any worse. And if he just stayed exactly the same as he did, you know, I think one thing that happens is we lose the line between a guy playing 30 or 40 games, right, and a guy playing 151 games. I think that's what gets blurred. I really do. Like, people just put them all together. They thought Matt Olson is Andrew Benintendi, right? And Matt Olson got hot for 25 games. Andrew Benintendi played the whole year. So I don't know. It stuns me. But anyway, Andrew Benintendi is having a wonderful, wonderful season. Now let's talk about somebody who may be more quietly having what I consider to be a pretty good season. And I know that Andrew, or that Darius knows a ton about this player I'm speaking of, and that's Jose Berríos of the Minnesota Twins. How do you feel his age 24 season is going, Darius?
Yeah, it's another impressive step forward, really. We've got more strikeouts, less walks. You love to see that. The curveball is still very, very good, and I think people have been excited about that for a while. It's one of the more giftable pitches in the majors. That's still driving the whiffs, I think. And I think he could get even better if the changeup would come along. It's still kind of just a show me pitch, and I think it's not actually that deceptive because his release point consistency with between that and the fastball is not great, so I think it's pretty easy for hitters to pick up from that regard. But he's been really good at the control, just two walks per nine. He's one of just 13 pitchers who's gone over 130 innings this year. I keep harping on about how it's difficult to find these guys who can throw 180, 190, 200 innings. Berríos is one of the few young guys that you can look at now and say, yeah, I think this guy is going to be able to do that over the next few years. And he's still only 24, so don't think it's unreasonable to expect a bit more growth and see maybe that a change-up come along and he could get even better. The one recent concern that I had was that he had a bit of a velocity dip over his last few starts. That seemed to come back up last time out, so maybe that was just a minor mechanical issue or he wasn't feeling quite right. I'm kind of a little bit less concerned about that than I was because it sort of seemed so sharp that might be hiding an injury. But overall, another impressive season from a young player, and I think, yeah, one of the few sort of reliable potential aces we could see over the next few years that we've got left in the majors with all the changes in pitching and pitchers only going five innings at most, and maybe even changing that even more with all the bullpen strategy we're seeing these days. So, yeah, Berríos might be one of the last of a rare breed, I think.
He also has been pretty unlucky with his, with his home run to fly ball rate. It's taken a significant step back from where it was last year, despite the fact that his ground ball percentage is up a couple percentage points. So there's a mishmash of things going on, but I think part of why I think he's stealthy in how much he's improved is that he was so uneven in last year's season. You know, he was incredible when he first got called up, and then he struggled, and then he was middling. And this year, I just think he's really steadied things out a great deal. So You know, he has probably gotten a little bit lucky. The only reason the FIP and the ex-FIP don't like him is because he's allowing a 254 BABIP, which is, you know, well below league average. But at the same time, we're still talking about a 24-year-old that has all these attributes that that Darius is speaking of. He's also managed to get to double-digit wins on a dreadful team. He's got twice as many wins as Jacob deGrom. So there you go. Anyway, it's I really think it's a very, very reassuring season for Berríos, and it's a huge asset for a small market team like the Twins to have a guy like this under control for a few more years, you know, with his arb years coming up yet. So I really think this has been a really good season overall for José Berríos. So I can get to my other stories, and I got some other questions for Darius that go from here. Let's get our guests a little earlier than we normally do from Mr. Austin. The players are Starling Marte, Blake Treinen, JT Realmuto, Cesar Hernandez, Eugenio Suarez, Andrew Benintendi, and José Berríos. So what do you think is the link that I was going for here?
Well, I didn't have one that I loved this week. I found a few things that tie them all together, but I'm not sure that any of them is going to be right. I'm pretty sure they're all definitely outperforming their draft position based on what people paid at the start of the season. I believe they're all in the top 12 at their position, actually, and some of them are obviously much higher than that. I mean, the likes of Benintendi, I think he's the number 4 or 5 outfielder right now. I think Suarez might be a 5th or 6th third baseman. I think Treinen is right up there with the closers as well. So that was something else. And then the other pattern that I noticed, and I don't know if it really qualifies as a pattern, is that there were kind of these age groupings. Marte and Treinen are almost the same age. Treinen just turned 30, but they were both 29 to start of the year. Realmuto, Hernandez, and Suarez were all 27 to start of the year. And then Benintendi and Berríos 24 now. So that was the other link I saw between them, that they were kind of in these sort of different age groupings and all still relatively young guys as well, I guess.
Yeah, I think, Darius, I think that you're on to where I'm trying to get here. I think these players have all made a large step forward. And what I really sort of want to get to here is I want to get to how big a step forward, how big do you think this has changed their value going forward? And that's going to have a lot to do with the questions that I asked from here, putting Darius on the spot. It's a good thing you're learned. You're so learned in the game of baseball, sir. I can do this to you. So
I'll do my best.
Okay, I'm going to give you some player comps for these guys and ask you some player comps for some others. The thing that is sort of going on in the backdrop, of course, is the three-sport league has started. Okay, and I did put Starling Marte on this list after I had already drafted him as my second offensive player in three-sport for next season. And I was openly wondering, and I was wondering if you were going to catch on to this, which you did, how much his draft stock has improved for next year because of how much the rest of the pack has fallen off of where we thought they were going to be in stolen bases. You know, we thought there was 40, 50 steal guys out there that you could get readily. And now Starling Marte is very recently was leading all of Major League Baseball in stolen bases. So anyway, let's give you a couple names and tell me who you would like more. And sort of, then you can sort of generally comment on exactly how much you think Marte's stock has risen because of the atmosphere that he's in now. How about Starling Marte or Lorenzo Cain for next year?
I'll still take Marte there. I think Cain has had a very nice season and he's really impressed me. I kind of had a bit of concern that he was going to fall off with him being slightly more advanced in age, but he's getting on base a ton. He's still running. I just think that, yeah, with him being 2-3 years older than Marte and maybe not quite so likely to run at a 40 steal pace again, I think I still go for Marte. But they're similar kind of players, and there's every chance that Cain will be in a much better lineup next year as well.
the biggest thing is do you think Marte has jumped some people with his performance this year?
Well, I think he did go fairly high anyway, and I think he'll probably, I think, was he around the third round this year? I expect him to end up in the second, barring anything happening over the next couple of months. So I think there'll be a few guys that he's passed. I suspect he was going maybe similar kind of range to Corey Seager. He's obviously going to fall way down draft boards. I wouldn't be surprised if there is maybe a pitcher or two in there. Trying to think who else went up. Josh Donaldson obviously was in that range. He's not going to be anywhere near Marte. So I think he'll jump those guys. But yeah, I'm trying to think of other outfielders that might have been in that range. I think Benintendi probably went in a similar spot to Marte as well, didn't he? So that will be an interesting choice. I suspect people will plump for Benintendi given his age and the Red Sox lineup.
Well, given this context or whatever, I just want to mention that Benintendi went way earlier than Starling Marte in this draft. I just want to say that Benintendi went way earlier than Starling Marte did in this draft, which of course, like I said, this is well before groupthink even sort of takes over and happens, so that could be an explanation of what's going on. But I really was in full blown wonder of exactly how Starling Marte is going to be treated and if there's going to be an adjustment going forward for Starling Marte, and the fact that steals have diminished once again for seemingly like a third or fourth straight year. All right, now let's do a player comp for Blake Treinen. Who would you rather have next year, Blake Treinen or Corey Knebel?
I think I'd rather have Treinen, actually. I mean, Knebel's got his own control issues. I think there's obviously other relievers in that pen, like Hader, who can easily step in, and I think Hader will continue to get saves. Even if he's not the full-time closer, I think he is going to be used in those multi-inning appearances, things like that. And I think I just believe in Treinen stuff slightly more. I think he's shown me a little bit more than Knebel has this year. But it's probably pretty close. I expect I will have them in the same band of closers.
Okay, now let's move on to the next one. Let's move on to Eugenio Suarez or Cody Bellinger.
Wow. Yeah, that's tricky. I know Bellinger has disappointed this year to a certain degree, although he's heated up quite a lot over the past month. I think that the problem, and you know, it seems mean to say that there's a problem with Suarez because he's hit so well, is just that he's definitely only going to be a four-category guy. I don't see any way he's going to start stealing bases because, as you mentioned earlier, he's not fast. And I think Bellinger, I mean, the guy's 22. He's very athletic. He's still out there playing center field for the Dodgers some days. I think he's going to rebound. I think he will steal double-digit bases, and I think he can easily match Suarez home run for home run if he gets back up to the level that he showed in 2017. So, yeah, I think I might just take Bellinger, but that would be probably a difficult decision for me on draft day and may well depend on how I'm feeling on the day and maybe how I've started off my draft as well.
Well, as mentioned earlier, I was in mid-draft, and I ended up taking Eugenio Suarez after I had given you the list of players, so I did not know that I was going to end up with him. But not only did Cody Bellinger go in front of Eugenio Suarez, but so did Reese Hoskins. How do you feel about Reese Hoskins versus Eugenio Suarez? And I haven't given you the full context that part of the reason that I'm so high on Suarez in the three-sport league is that it's an OBP league, you know, which seems to, you know, hurt both Bellinger and to a lesser extent Hoskins. But I can't fathom Hoskins over Suarez. Can you?
No, I don't see it. I don't think he has. I know he's stolen a few bases, but I don't think he's got Bellinger's athleticism or his base running acumen. I think he's probably going to tail off, and he's actually, I think he's maybe 3 years older than Bellinger is as well. So that shouldn't be underestimated. So I think I see them maybe as having similar kind of profiles, but with Suarez, and maybe a better park. And I think he's just shown more skill at having that high BABIP, hitting more line drives. I think his average will remain higher. So yeah, I would rather take Suarez.
Okay, now let's move on to Andrew Benintendi. Andrew Benintendi or George Springer for next year?
Oh, that's, I kind of feel like their profiles are maybe crossing over, and Springer is, he's rebounded a bit in the steals department. It looked like he might just stop running altogether, and that's come back a bit, but I think Benintendi's going to easily beat him in steals, and I would expect him to win at batting average as well, even though I think Springer will probably hit more home runs. So I'll take Benintendi in that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Springer was, you know, received a lot of hype for how well he did in the postseason last year, but at the same time, that's probably gone back down to earth a little bit this season. You know, it's hard to claim that a team that's playing as well as the Astros are have been disappointing offensively, but at times they have. Of course, Carlos Correa has been hurt. You know, Springer hasn't taken a large step forward. He's just stayed a really good player. And Altuve's power has not, you know, reoccurred as we were hoping it was going to, especially people who took him in the second spot, or dare I say, some people who are taking him in the first spot. Now I'm going to put you even more on the spot, Darius, and I'm going to ask you, who are the kind of players that you think Cesar Hernandez perhaps jumped this season that he was behind last year? I think it's kind of trickier. I mean, I was trying to come up with some names. You'd still prefer Brian Dozier to Cesar Hernandez? Is that true?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think the gap has gotten a lot smaller, and we're kind of waiting for the Dozier second half explosion. But he is probably going to be starting the downswing of his career, and I would expect the batting average to be a lot lower than Hernandez's. So yeah, I would still take Dozier, but it's gotten a hell of a lot closer than it was in the preseason.
That's just kind of a, second base is kind of an odd position because there's not a lot of people who jump out at you who are having really good seasons. I take it, regardless of landing spot, I guess unless it were to be Colorado, would you prefer Cesar Hernandez now to Daniel Murphy?
Yeah, I would. I think I have great concerns over Murphy's injury this year. You know, the length of time which it took him to get back, and his age. I just worry. We've seen so many of these guys over the last few years kind of go from the elite level to basically not playing at all, like Tulo and Donaldson and David Wright. These things can snowball very quickly, and I don't have a ton of faith in Murphy coming back to peak Daniel Murphy. So, yeah, I think I would take Hernandez there.
I feel like I've been difficult enough on you that I should give you a softball, since I know this guy was going earlier in drafts. Who would you prefer next year? Would you prefer Cesar Hernandez or Rougned Odor? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've been using Odor in TGFBI actually, because somebody did drop him, and he's actually been fine for me. He's kind of improved a lot lately, but I don't know. He feels like one of those pitchers, you know, where no matter how good he looks some days, you're never really going to fully trust him just because he doesn't walk, and there's like no flaw there. If the batting average goes, it turns into a 2017 situation, really, and he totally craters. And we just haven't seen the growth from him, really. I think we all thought he was so young when he came up and he was so impressive then that we would just see him develop, and it hasn't really happened for him. So I think until Odor shows us that he can improve his approach a little bit, he's always going to be kind of a boom or bust guy. And maybe that's the kind of guy you want to go after if you're in a shallow league and it's going to be easy to pick up guys like Hernandez. But if I'm in any league with any kind of depth, I'd rather take the safe batting average and the, you know, 10 homers and the 25 steals or whatever it is Hernandez is going to give you, especially if he's going to keep leading off of Philadelphia.
Okay, I think we skipped over one here, and this is kind of a rude comparison to make, and is sort of a current eventsy question. How about JT Realmuto or Gary Sanchez next year? What's your gut say?
My gut still says Sanchez. I don't think anything else could have gone wrong for Sanchez this season. It all seems to be kind of going downhill for him. I think the media is obviously all over him. The injuries haven't helped. The luck has been bad. And I think, you know, he hasn't hit as well as he did last season to boot. So it's all kind of combined. But I just don't think you can find guys that catcher with his kind of power anywhere else. The lineup is stacked, and I have faith that he will come back. He will have a healthier season, and he will capitalize on being in what is an incredible Yankees lineup now. So as good as Real Muto has been, I just don't think he has the upside of Sanchez.
That is actually quite fascinating. And how about Jose Barrios? This one's going to be pretty difficult too. How about Jose Barrios or Carlos Carrasco?
Yeah, I've kind of always been like lagging behind the pack on Carrasco. I've found him to be, again, perhaps you mentioned how inconsistent Barrios was last year. I've kind of always had a bit of that problem with Carrasco. I feel like, just as you sort of think, oh yeah, he's definitely a no doubt ace, then he kind of comes out and disappoints you again. And he's been fine this year. I think that the ERA is not really reflective of his skill. I think he's still going to get more strikeouts, so I'll still take Carrasco over Barrios. But I think I will have them in a similar band of tiers when I'm drafting.
Okay, let's get current events again. How do you feel about Jose Barrios going forward versus James Paxton?
I love Paxton, but I'm kind of continually surprised that he's still on the field. And so, yeah, I don't think I could take Paxton over Barrios, as exciting as he is and as mind-blowing as the stuff is. I just buy into Barrios's durability more. And I think Paxton has probably got, what, 5-6 years on him as well. You know, he didn't really break out until in a relatively late age. And so I think people might be surprised to find out how old he is. I think he's going to turn 30 soon. So, yeah, I'll take Barrios over Paxton.
Okay. How about Barrios or Charlie Morton?
Wow, yeah, I love what Morton's done, but I don't see it just carrying on. I mean, Rich Hill kind of is the comp I think of. When he's on the field, he's outstanding, but I don't really believe that Morton is going to hold up for a whole season either. It is amazing that he is doing so far this year, but I don't know if he's ever really pitched a full season. I mean, maybe like, you know, a decade ago or something, but I can't see him standing up to it either. So yeah, as unbelievable as he's been, I think I will take Barrios there as well.
Well, I think we covered some players here, and I just wanted to sort of get a gauge on the stock of some players that I think are rising this year. Their values are really rising, and I'm trying to gauge exactly how much they've risen and where we think this is headed. That was sort of the point of this activity today, and it's really going to make for some fascinating draft conundrums next year, some of the seasons that these guys are having. You're not exactly used to the idea of an Oakland A's closer maybe being a top five closer. That's not something that we're used to thinking. And the Pirates, you know, post Andrew McCutchen, were supposed to be nothing to speak of. And Marte, and a bit of a mini rebirth from Polanco. There seems to be something brewing in Pittsburgh right now. They've shot themselves right back into the wild card race just when we had them completely down and out. And second base hasn't been very good. So a guy like Cesar Hernandez, what a tremendous asset he was this year if you got him around his ADP, because of all the negativity that was surrounding the possible Scott Kingery call-up that turned into a contract that we mentioned before. So, you know, and Eugenio Suarez is a guy that I just think has the demeanor and plays in a location where he's always going to be a little bit underrated. But that .391 on base percentage looms pretty large to me, with outstanding numbers to go with them. Andrew Benintendi is the only guy on this list that's really hidden, because he's, you know, embedded in a lineup full of superstars and superstar personas, which Benintendi, I think, doesn't quite get enough credit for the fact that he's sort of just this laid-back, happy-go-lucky guy. He's not a sort of an attention-seeking person. I guess maybe that belies the fact that he's got some sick dance moves that they celebrate wins with. But other than that, you don't hear a lot about him in the media or him sort of trying to be in the public eye. And Jose Berríos, of course, plays for the Twins. And one thing the Twins haven't done in seemingly about 4.5 decades is develop a pitcher. I know that was an exaggeration because I went way past Johan Santana, maybe even past past Brad Radke. But the point being is that Jose Berríos is the diamond in the rough that has been the Minnesota Twins pitching staff this year. So thank you so much for your analysis on these guys. Darius, I really appreciate it. Why don't you give us a synopsis of one of the ventures that you're on now, or two if you have time, and tell us where you can be reached on Twitter.
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. Carrying on with the Great Fantasy Waiver Wire project at Baseball Prospectus this week, I took a kind of look at some fab spending trends and what percentage of budgets people have spent so far, and whether people are consistent in how they allocate their budget kind of from week to week, and whether those things are kind of moderate and conservative, or are people going all out, what kind of the balance is there with how people are choosing to spend their money. And then you can also find me over at Batflips and Nerds. We should have another pod coming this week, so I think it's been a while since we all got together and just had a chat with the four of us, because we've had a bunch of good guests and that lately. So look out for kind of a bit of a mid-season take and what we think will be going the rest of the way. And I think we might be reviewing some bold predictions from our listeners as well, some of which were very bold, that we had at an event at the start of the year. So that should be a fun one to listen to as well.
Nice. Your friend Tom Pringle from Bad Flips and Nerds is the first person that will take over a vacant franchise in my three-sport league. You seem pretty excited about that. I am orchestrating this draft right now. We are in the 12th round, and there will be a podcast organized that will be on all three channels, the basketball, the football, and the baseball channel of FWFB on iTunes or what have you. So I'm doing some work for that and keeping that draft going in the right direction, which is going quite well to this point. And so there will be some ongoing commentary about that, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. But I do think some fascinating things are happening, and we're getting out some idea of where the players' perception are going to be going into the draft season. And, of course, as I said, this sort of phenomenon known as this steamroller of media and analyst coverage will give us an extra way to look at exactly how affected people's draft position get thereof. So anyway, this is Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I want to thank everyone for the time and the download. If you get a chance, you decide you want to give some reviews to some podcasts, make sure and give us a 4-star review on iTunes or on Stitcher or your various podcatcher. And also make sure to follow through on the nominations for the podcast awards. We would love to be appreciated for our steady and great volume of work that we do here at FWFB, to which I oversee a couple podcasts a week, and we're fortunate enough to have the voice of Darius Austin with us on a regular basis as well. So enjoy the weekend. Enjoy baseball. This stretch drive here for baseball looks like it's going to be especially fascinating, and we will keep talking both about players and about baseball for the rest of the year for you. Thanks again, FWFB Concept or Pod Quiz Podcast, signing off.